This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This week saw yet another skirmish in the long battle over the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant, with yet another lawsuit filed over whether the facility should be allowed to stay up and running. For years, there's been a huge argument in the Green Mountain State over who gets to decide whether the plant is relicensed or not. In every other state, it's up to the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission to renew or deny licenses. But in Vermont, the state's Public Service Board also has a say, and this dual authority has led to heated disagreements and lots of legal action, since Vermont Yankee at this point has federal, but not state, approval. And behind the long back and forth over this question of authority are deep divisions over the wisdom of nuclear energy in general and concerns about Vermont Yankee in particular. Supporters say the facility's low-cost, carbon-free power generation has kept Vermont's electric rates down, its carbon footprint low, and its air clean. Opponents point to the plant's troubled safety record, from a cooling tower that collapsed 5 years ago to continued reports of leaking radioactive material. Today in The Exchange, the Green Mountain State's nuclear power debate. Let's hear from you. Should Vermont Yankee be part of New England's energy mix or not? If so, how do you quell concerns about public safety? And if not, how do you fill that large energy hole that nuclear power now provides? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. With me in studio is Howard Schaefer, coordinator of the American Nuclear Society's Grassroots Project, which advocates for nuclear science. Howard's an engineer by training. He's worked at nuclear power plants around New England. And Howard, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us from Maine is Raymond Shattis, technical advisor for the New England Coalition, a group of citizens and scientists concerned about nuclear energy. The group opposes Vermont Yankee's bid to continue operating, filed a lawsuit before the Vermont Supreme Court to that effect just this week. And Ray Shattis, thank you also for being with us.
Great to be here.
And joining us from Montpelier is John Dillon, reporter for Vermont Public Radio, who's been covering this story. And John, thanks for taking the time.
Hi, Laura.
Well, John, let's start with you, because, boy, this is complicated, and I'd love for you to clear it up for us. The fundamentals of this debate is about nuclear power, whether it's safe, concerns about it, but it's wrapped up in Vermont over this question of who has final say over whether a nuclear plant can be relicensed or not. Explain Vermont's unique regulatory system regarding this, John.
Well, that system is being tested in various legal forums. And right now you have Vermont Yankee, a 42 or so year old plant that's putting out a lot of electrons into the grid, not selling any into Vermont, but employing indirectly a lot of lawyers involved in settling this question of whether the plant gets a new 20-year state license. It does have a federal license. Vermont's unique, not because it has a Public Utilities Commission, the Public Service Board, that regulates utilities and as such regulates Vermont Yankee. It's unique because state law gave the legislature a say over Vermont Yankee's future. That law was amended a number of years ago to say the legislature had to sign off, had to agree on more nuclear waste storage and a license extension on the state level. Before the Public Service Board, that Utilities Commission, which New Hampshire has one of those as well, before that utility commission could issue a license. So other states have utility commissions that regulate or grant licenses, state licenses for power plants, including nuclear power plants. What makes Vermont unique is the legislature's role. And that's what's being challenged in federal court, now in appeals court. That's what's employing a lot of lawyers. The state of Vermont, the Senate in the state of Vermont 2 years ago voted not to go ahead with the license, and that precipitated a lawsuit by Entergy Vermont Yankee challenging the state's authority, saying the state of Vermont was preempted under federal law, under the Atomic Energy Act, from regulating or looking or considering issues of nuclear safety and radiological health. That the state lost that case, and that's now on appeal. That's one arena that that the plant's future is being decided on. The other is the state public service board, which I mentioned, that is in fact reviewing Vermont Yankee's request for a new 20-year license extension.
So right now the plant, John, correct me if I'm wrong, is in this sort of gray zone. It got federal approval in March of last year, but still no approval from the state public service board. Is that where you're at?
That's right. The federal court, when it struck down and ruled against Vermont and these two, it said that these two laws giving the state legislature a say were invalid, said the plant could continue operating because it had a valid federal license. But it did not block the Public Service Board from continuing to review the plant's request to keep operating under state law. And basically, there's sort of federal areas that only the federal government can regulate nuclear plants on, and those are radiological health and safety. But the Supreme Court back in the 80s apparently left other areas for the state to be involved in, including questions of economics, environment, and general public good. The state issues this thing called a certificate of public good. And so it's under those standards that the state believes it has the authority to decide the plant's future.
Boy, public good, that's pretty subjective, isn't it, John?
It is, but it includes, it does include this question of economics. You know, they employ 600 or more people, a lot of contractors, they pay a ton of taxes, so that's, you know, the Entergy would argue that's in the public good. They don't sell electricity any longer to Vermont utilities. That may be an issue that, you know, the public good would be challenged, and they store radiological waste on site. So those two things would be on the scale as the public good is weighed in these hearings before the Public Service Board.
Well, and John, I want to bring in our other two guests again, Ray Shattis with the New England Coalition, which has been opposing Vermont Yankee, and Howard Schaefer, coordinator of the American Nuclear Society's Grassroots Project. And Howard, to you, there have been public hearings around Vermont just last month in November. Lots of supporters came out, lots of opponents came out. What were some of the major points that your side of this argument made, Howard, that argued that Vermont Yankee is serving the public good in Vermont?
John has touched on a number of them, the economics, Vermont's fair share of the New England grid, the clean electricity that's generated, and the need for the electricity in New England, and then the participation of the very large plant staff in the community in volunteer and charitable work, all big factors for the public good.
And when you talk about clean electricity for Vermont's share, so even though you're saying that the power from Vermont Yankee goes onto the New England grid, so indirectly Vermont benefits from that too.
Yes, because Vermont and all the other states are in cooperation dependent on the grid. So I say it can be looked at as doing the state's fair share to support the common utility.
And to you, I think, Ray Shattis, your group opposes Vermont Yankee on many fronts. As I said, filed a lawsuit with the state Supreme Court just this week. Give us your big overview, the arguments that your coalition was making last month, and then we'll get into detail as the hour goes on. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, purported benefits of Vermont Yankee are few. When, on balance, you consider that we are tying not just this generation, but the next generation of Vermont people into nuclear waste storage, that precludes reuse of that site for any other purpose. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission just recently issued a statement that basically allowed that they had, in formulating their regulations, failed to consider the huge impact of nuclear accidents on the quality of life of the affected communities. And as you know, following the news, in Japan, large areas had to be evacuated. People wound up with losing their homes, their homesteads, their farms, their communities, their places of worship, their ancestral burial grounds. Basically, all the kinds of civil benefits that we in New England tend to love and cherish. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said that they really had failed to consider the great psychological and health impact of an accident that led to that kind of disruption.
And I know that your side has talked about the Japanese disaster, and I want to get back to that. But John Dillon, I know you have to leave us. So real quickly to you, what's the next step in this complicated process that you laid out over whether this plant can stay open or not?
Well, it's happening. The litigation is happening on several forums. In January, there'll be oral arguments in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York City on the state's appeal of that adverse ruling, the ruling that went against them a year ago, January. And then on the state level, Ray's group has filed a motion with the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, to enforce a public service board order that would shut the plant down temporarily until it gets a new state license, if it gets a new state license. And then this sort of mega process before our Utilities Commission continues with technical hearings scheduled later this in early next year, and a decision not expected until sometime in the fall of 2013. So, again, lots of litigation, several different forums, and plant's future very much up in the air.
All right, and lots for you to cover, John, too.
Yes.
Thanks a lot for being with us. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
That's John Dillon reporting from Montpelier with Vermont Public Radio. He's been covering this story about Vermont Yankee. We'll get your thoughts after a short break, so stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on the Vermont Yankee debate coming up on The Exchange, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, The Future of Landline Phones. Enjoy the holidays with NHPR. We planned a number of special programs through the rest of the month, including Hanukkah Lights. NPR's Susan Stamberg and Murray Horowitz read stories and memoirs written by acclaimed authors. Join us tomorrow night at 9 and have a look at our full holiday schedule at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Franklin Pierce University, a leader in adult education, offering an MBA in Energy and Sustainability Studies. New term begins soon. Information at franklinpierce.edu. From Vineyard Brands, importers of Mann Vintners, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Chenin Blanc from Coastal Vineyards near Cape Town, South Africa. mannvintners.co.za. And Mascoma Savings Bank, serving the people in needs of the Upper Connecticut River Valley since 1899. Online at mascomabank.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the intense debate in the Green Mountain State over relicensing the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. And as we heard, Vermont Yankee has federal approval to continue operating, but has yet to get state approval. And that issue has been wrapped up in the courts in Vermont. Our number here in The Exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Let's hear from you. Should Vermont Yankee continue to be part of New England's energy mix or not? If you think so, how do you quell concerns about safety, given some of the issues on Vermont Yankee's safety record? And if not, how would you fill that large energy hole that nuclear power here in New England is now providing? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Howard Schaefer, I want to go back to you again with the American Nuclear Society's Grassroots Project. John Dillon at Vermont Public Radio did a great job giving us all the detail on the ground, the wrangling between various boards and commissions and courts and lawsuits. In your mind, though, Howard, again, as someone who worked in the nuclear industry. What's the big picture behind all this?
To me, after being at this public outreach for 30 years, the biggest picture is that it's a public, political, worldwide debate, international, about risk versus benefit. Number of places, including the U.S., the governments would have to make these tough decisions, has decided the risk is worth the benefit for having nuclear power compared to the alternatives. As illustrated in the paper right out there, the Boston Globes in Asia or worldwide because of air pollution, 1.3 million early deaths every year. That's the alternative for air pollution, a lot of it from coal. And then there are a number of people who don't think the risk is worth the benefit. And they're opposing that in their all the venues available to them, street marches, public forums, lawsuits. That's the democratic process. And underlying the opposition, there's a number of people who are really afraid of radiation. And a number of people who support it and work in it are cautious of it, aware of its great power, but always very careful. And we feel, those who work in it, that there's some people who exploit that fear of radiation amongst those who are opposing the plant. But it's the difficult question that governments have to make about risks versus benefit. And as you said, well, if Vermont, it's not Vermont Yankee, what is it?
You know, that's a really interesting point. And Ray, I want to hear from you, too, in just a minute. But this risk versus benefit, and we're hearing a lot about this today, with climate change, Howard, and some people are saying, you know, I'm worried about the impact of climate change in addition to the air pollution impacts from fossil fuels. But then you do have the concerns that people like Ray raise. For your average person like me, you know, I don't have the technical expertise that you and Ray have. How do I assess those risks? It's so hard to do.
It is hard. And that's where it calls for public outreach, which I've been doing and opponents have been doing, putting things in terms of public can understand. It's true when you look at the accident in Japan, that's pretty scary. But the part of that which weighs in the government's decision is it's very, very rare.
Yeah, they look at it, though, and we go, well, we don't want to be that rare person because it's so horrible.
But the government's average the effect on the whole country over time. And they say, well, yes, it's a coal plant here, it's a coal plant there, it's asthma here. And they look at the total impact on the society, and it hasn't really been acknowledged up front that, yes, we're asking this locality to take some risk for the overall benefit of the society.
And the people on
but
the
banks that would be true of the Northern Pass line, of an airport, of an oil refinery, anything else. You know, yes, you take some benefit, but we take care of you. We compensate that in some way.
What do you think, Ray, this broader point about risk assessment? That's really what we're looking at here, whether we think the risk of nuclear power is worth the benefit. Again, in our era, you know, fossil-free fuel.
Well, there's a number of things that really need to be mentioned here. This is a discussion that should have taken place 20 years ago and actually did take place 20 years ago. Nothing new under the sun here except that the news on global warming is getting worse. The simple fact is that if you want to combat global warming in an effective and timely way, then you want to build natural gas plants.
Although natural gas is still a fossil fuel.
Well, yes, of course it is. And I'm not a defender of the fossil fuel industry by any means. But natural gas plants typically put out about half of the CO2 that a coal plant would put out for producing the same amount of electricity. And the deal is that you can deploy natural gas plants much more quickly and much more cheaply than you can nuclear plants. If for the sake of argument, and it really is only for the sake of argument, you say that nuclear plants are fossil fuel free, which they are not, but if you say that, the time and cost of deploying nuclear plants The 8 to 10 to more years of construction. Florida Power and Light's now estimating anywhere from $10 to $14 billion of construction cost per plant. You simply cannot build them fast enough or cheaply enough to keep up with the reduction in carbon emissions that you would get from building an equivalent number of an equivalent megawatt number of gas plants.
I see. So if you're talking about just sucking carbon out of the air, you're better off building a couple natural gas plants quickly, Ray, you're saying, than taking the time and cost of deploying a big nuclear power facility.
Quite so.
I want your thoughts on that, Howard, but then I do want to go to the phone. So let me just remind listeners, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477, and we'll take your calls in just a minute. But Ray raises a real interesting point, Howard, and this has been an issue for other alternative energies, not just nuclear. How does the boom in natural gas recently change the equation for nuclear power? What do you think?
Well, it has changed it in the decisions that some companies have made to stop going on with nuclear power plant plans that they had, which raises a whole question of our crazy national energy policy or lack of it, where people are making decision about something that's a 60-year investment based on this year's natural gas prices. And not only the prices, but using natural gas quickly as an interim, well, what do we do in the long term with those plants we build now using natural gas, as Mr. Shadda says, to cut down on the carbon emission but not eliminate it? And he, at one point he made this discussion should have taken place 20 years ago. Actually, it took place about 50 years ago in Congress when they made the initial decision to sponsor nuclear power as a replacement for coal.
And set up the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Well, at first it was the Atomic Energy Commission, but
yes,
then it morphed into Nuclear Regulatory Commission. That's correct.
Yeah.
That discussion took then, and it's been come up in every licensing hearing since then.
And I want to ask you guys later about some concerns about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but lots of people who want to jump in our conversation too. So let's invite them now. Again, 1-800-892-6477. We want your thoughts today about Vermont Yankee and whether it should be allowed to continue operating, contributing to New England's energy mix or not. And if not, what you might replace it with. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. First up is Mike in Wolfboro. Hi, Mike. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'll start by saying that I'm for pursuing nuclear power. I wanted to bring up the point that was just recently raised, which is people make this cost-benefit decision about where to live and the danger of living in a certain place all the time. People live in flood areas and other dangerous places. So to take that further, then, unlike a place where flooding takes place, as soon as the water's gone, people can start rebuilding and cleaning up. Whereas I guess one question would be, what happens in a place with a nuclear disaster? I guess we can look to Japan, and maybe your guests can discuss that. The other point that I wanted to make was, I'm sure with global warming, the technology that we have now that will help us with global warming, of all those choices, nuclear power is probably the cleanest and the most, the one that we're going to most rapidly advance. And the third point is that I'm sure that per facility, the number of injuries and deaths at coal mining and oil refineries and those far outnumber the number of deaths and injuries that have occurred around nuclear power plants.
Okay,
so
Mike.
Those 3 points.
Yeah, and that's great because it fits right in with what we were talking about, Ray, about this whole idea of how we weigh the risks and benefits of nuclear power. Can you address Mike's point, and not just from the broad the broad aspect of nuclear power, but also in terms of Vermont Yankee and the folks who live in that area, since he mentioned, you know, the local impacts. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, in terms of Vermont Yankee, firstly on the benefit side. The Vermont Yankee provides less than 1.8% of the available capacity, electric capacity, in New England.
Not just Vermont, New England, then.
In New England, yes. In New England, we have about 35,000 megawatts of available capacity And Vermont Yankee, you know, when it's running hot and true, represents about 640 megawatts of capacity.
Wow, that's not very much.
Well, it's a very small amount. I'll give you an idea of how small it is. The seasonal difference in transmission, electric transmission losses, more than swamps that 1.8%. In other words, from winter to summer, our electricity transmission losses over the power lines can exceed that 1.8%.
Sort of leaky power lines. I mean, I know they're not really leaky, but just electricity that's lost in the
well,
process of transmission.
They're stubborn.
And to that, real quickly, to you, I think, Howard, is it worth it? If Vermont Yankee is providing such a small slice of New England's electric pie, is it worth all the trouble?
Well, obviously we say yes. And Ray was very careful to say 1.8% of capacity. Now we're talking about electric generation and distribution. Vermont is that portion, Vermont Yankee and the other plants in its category, not nuclear, but also baseload, the portion that run all the time. There's some plants which can only run for a short time or are only designed to come on and off, or, for instance, the pump storage plants. They can only run for several hours, but they're part of that capacity. So when you look at the overall grid, yes, base load is needed, and it's much more. You know, and those transmission line losses all across the grid are part of the story. But also Vermont Yankee, when it was built, was strategically placed for the grid, as well as intentionally placed in Vermont because the utilities wanted the revenue. So, and I found out just recently, one of the selling points to put it there was jobs in Windham County, which was pretty depressed back there in the 60s.
You know, our caller, Mike, from Wolfboro, and thanks a lot, Mike, for jumping in this morning. He said he supports nuclear energy, but he did have concerns about local cleanup. Again, he said when it floods, Howard, you know, after the floods, people can clean up. Nuclear energy, it's a little more difficult and a little more concerning given the health effects of radiation.
There is that concern now. We're going to learn, and we are learning a great deal from Japan on what they actually do. They're cleaning up and having people returning now. The science of radiation safety and the effects of radiation on health has advanced greatly in the last 30 years, but the regulations have not changed. So we know from the exposures in Japan that how wildly conservative the regulations are, and based on current knowledge, which is not in the regulations yet, but they need not have evacuated more than about 2 miles around the Fukushima plant.
So the regulations are overly cautious?
Oh,
is that
yes.
What you're saying?
Well, and that was intentionally done when the regulations were put in based on the best science then, and that has continued along in the regulations.
What do you think, Ray? This is for you. Our caller again, Mike, said, look, of all the choices out there in terms of clean power, you know, he'd rather see nuclear than coal or natural gas or some of the other dirtier fuels that we rely on right now. This keeps coming up, and I just wonder what you think, Ray.
Well, look, in terms of rapid deployment, in 2011, there were more than 8,000 megawatts of new wind generation that went online in the United States. And there were zero new megawatts of nuclear. And it speaks to how quickly these forms of energy can be deployed. It speaks to the ability to more widely distribute them. You know, hands down, at this point, the alternatives are coming on strong, moving to be ever more inexpensive, while nuclear is stalled and is proving to be ever more expensive.
Although, boy, in the Granite State, Ray, we've had a huge debate over hydropower from Canada. A lot of people are opposed to this Northern Pass project that would come through this state. And then we did a show just last week on a new wind power proposal, a bigger one than we've seen here in New Hampshire. And lots of folks are fighting that, too. So the alternatives are facing their own battles.
Hey, you know, name your poison.
Yeah,
New Hampshire, you know, certainly has had the experience of trying to pay off construction costs on Seabrook. and Seabrook, currently is struggling with construction defects. They have crumbling concrete.
There was some news about that just recently.
So I think it pays to really, look at these issues, to read up on them. Even the history of radiological protection. I like Howard's version of it. I wish it were true.
The extreme safety, saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact is that as safety standards are being developed, it was always in the political sphere because at the height of the Cold War, we thought somehow that having lots of nuclear plants would make us shinier and prettier than the Soviet Union.
All right. And Ray, I want to go to another call if I could. This is John in Putney, Vermont. Hi, John. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much. So I just wanted to talk to the guests about just reliability and safety in terms of how old the plant is. I was looking recently, listeners might be interested in Googling, Aloha Airlines Flight 243. It was a 737 airplane that was flying in 1988 with 90 passengers and 5 crew. And it was old, and the whole top of the plane blew off in midair. One flight attendant was actually blown out to her death. Our plant, the VY plant, was licensed in 1972, 40 years ago, for an operating lifetime of 40 years. And we've, it's 40 years later now. And just like that plane shouldn't have been in the sky, and people would be pretty chilled to see how that looks. It's amazing to me that it's still licensed that the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has licensed it to keep on going past its safe life. I have friends who are nuclear energy engineers in Europe. And those nukes, when they hit their 40-year or their usable license time, they shut them down. But it's pretty scary to me that something that is so potentially dangerous is allowed to continue going. We would never allow it for an airplane, but we do seem to allow it for something that's far more dangerous than an airplane.
John, good to hear from you, especially since you're in Vermont where this debate is really ongoing. So we will address the issue of aging nuclear power plants after a very short break. Thanks for chiming in, John. We'll take your calls, too, after that break, 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Living Innovations, helping seniors live comfortably and safely in their own home with personalized care from a few hours per week to round the clock. LivingInnovations.com. And from Mill Falls Marketplace in Meredith, featuring 12 shops and 5 restaurants open daily for local shopping and dining during this holiday season. Directory at MillFallsMarketplace.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
A cancer rarely seen in the U.S. is killing children in Africa. It's caused by a virus, and that gives doctors some hope.
If you know an infection is a cause of cancer, if you attack the infection, you can actually prevent the cancer.
Scientists in Seattle and Uganda explore cancer's infectious connection. That's next time on The World, tonight at 7 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, re-examining New Hampshire's death penalty law. Email us your thoughts before the show at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, debate continues over the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. We've been jumping into that debate this hour, whether the plant should be allowed to continue operating or not. Right now, Vermont Yankee has federal approval to stay up and running, but not yet state approval. Give us your thoughts. Should Vermont Yankee be part of New England's electric mix? If so, how do you address concerns about safety? If not, how do you fill the hole that pulling nuclear out would create? Right now, nuclear energy is about 20% of our country's electric generation supply. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We also welcome comments on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Howard Schaefer and Ray Shattis, before we go back to the phones, I did want to address John's called just before the break. He said, look, these plants are 40 years old. They were only built to last 40 years. He said, Howard, in Europe, once a plant passes its safe age, they unpack it. They take it down. He's concerned about these aging plants. What do you think?
I understand his concern, and it's good that he references Europe because there they make political decisions too. But in the broader picture of technology, since he cited one particular airplane accident, in technology, things are designed for a certain usable life, but there's a lot of fat put in. Depends on how it's used and maintained. Any technology, your car, airplane, nuclear power plant, can be worn out before its time, or it can go a lot longer. For instance, just in airplanes, DC-3s, which were built actually before World War II, some of them are still flying around the world because they had a lot of fat built in them, and the ones that are flying have been maintained. So you cannot make that sort of a comparison. But the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the regulators in Europe, they look at each particular plant.
You know, there's been concerns, though, about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Pardon the expression. It's been said that they are in bed with the nuclear industry. And last year, Howard, the Associated Press did an in-depth investigative report looking at the relationship between the NRC and the industry, finding out that time and time again, when a nuclear facility had a hard time reaching federal standards, the NRC said, okay, we'll just lower the standards and now you're in compliance again. Voila. How confident are you in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and its own commitment to letting these plants run safely?
I'm having worked with Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff people over the years in my work. I am confident. They are trying to carry out their mandate from Congress, which is to have nuclear power safely, but to have it, not to be shutting it down at the drop of every hat. And as experience goes along, regulatory standards are evolving too. And they make judgments on standards based on the best knowledge at the time. But then when it comes to actual experience in the plants, they find at times they need to adjust them. And they have adjusted up and they have adjusted down.
Ray, your thoughts on the concerns over aging nuclear power plants, not just a concern with Vermont Yankee and Seabrook, but around the country. Go ahead, Ray.
Basically, the plants were licensed for 40 years based on economic considerations, largely, not construction standards. However, once it was decided in this country that we would be issuing 40-year licenses, the people who were building the plants went out to their vendors and they specified equipment that would last 40 years. And that's the vendor's guarantee. For example, at Vermont Yankee, the reactor vessel, the number one arch component of the nuclear power station, the great steel cauldron that actually holds the reactor core, was certified by its vendors for 40 years, and not a day longer, 40 years. I appreciate the idea of engineering conservation, as Howard mentioned, the idea that, yes, you build a highway bridge 1.5 or 2 or 3 times stronger than it needs to be, just to make sure that a truck doesn't fall through it. With a reactor, yes, in some areas of it, many areas, many components, there is engineering conservation built in. However, I can't agree, since unlike a school bus or an airplane, you're not just taking a few passengers for a ride, you're taking the whole community and the environment for a ride. I can agree that it's a good idea to cut away engineering conservation just because you want to keep the plant running longer. And that's exactly what's happening. Well, and it's happening nationwide as well as at Vermont Yankee. And, I lay it right in the lap of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, who basically never says no to the industry.
What do you think about that very quickly, Howard, and then back to the phones? That's the concern also that this Associated Press report came out with, that the NRC never says no to nuclear plants.
Well, the record doesn't support that. They fined people. They referred people to the Attorney General for prosecution. They've told plants to shut down. They've told them to stay shut down. Remember, their job is not to just be safe and, oh, well, we can get them all off the road and be safe. That would be like the state police saying, well, we can get rid of all the cars, but that doesn't quite, you know, fulfill the mission. And I think we'll have to look into, you know, reactor vessel design specifically more, because it was understood at the beginning how critical a reactor vessel was, and that it was not a replaceable component like so many others are and have been replaced, so that there was lots of fat put in it based on the best technology had at the time for designing. And because the calculation ability was pretty low in those days before computers, we find out now there's even more fat than we thought.
Let's take another call. Our last caller was from Putney, Vermont, and also Lex is from Putney, Vermont. Hi, Lex. Thanks for hanging on. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, all. In all of this discussion, you know, we know that carbon-based fuels are bad. We know what the effect is, and we know that nuclear is scary. But I've never heard any discussion about liquid fluoride thorium reactors as an alternative. And it seems that thorium is ubiquitous fuel. It's easily gotten. It's not weaponizable byproduct. The reactors are easily turned off. It would be an immediate solution to the Iran problem if we were to say, okay, well, yes, you can build thorium reactors, and they say they want just clean nuclear power. They wouldn't be able to weaponize from the byproduct. I'm just wondering why there isn't any discussion about this.
Well, and Lex, it's so interesting that you call on this, because Howard Schaefer right now in the studio with me is holding up a book that says Thorium, Energy Cheaper Than Coal. This is maybe a long, complicated answer. Can both of you just briefly address what he's saying? Howard, why don't you go first, since you've got the book in your hand?
Sure. Professor Bob Hargraves from Dartmouth just put this out. Great book, available on Amazon. You can leave out the reactor part. It gives the background on the whole energy discussion. There's more thorium than there is uranium. It's a fuel source to run reactors. It's still a reactor. You still have some waste, but a lot less. This type of reactor, where the fuel is in a liquid mixed, was run and proven at Oak Ridge, but then they stopped the development of it for financial reasons, because the Atomic Energy Commission only had so many dollars to go in so many directions. But now Bob Hargraves was just back in China a few weeks ago, and the Chinese are putting $360 million into this.
So these are nuclear reactors, they do it differently?
Yeah. The fuel is not solid. It's in liquid form, and it's continually being processed as the plant runs. But with smaller plants, Bob's plan, and this is what the Chinese are looking at, making small ones on a mass production basis like Boeing makes airplanes. So instead of 1,000 megawatts on a site, you might have 4 or 5 liquid thorium reactors.
It's interesting, and we see that with other forms of alternative energy, too. Let's go micro instead of macro. Ray, we could probably do a whole hour on this. Lex,
yeah, well,
I'm so glad you called. What do you think, Ray?
It's really not worth spending a lot of time discussing. You know, my attitude is, let me know how it works out, fellas. In the meantime, there are literally hundreds of different kinds of reactor designs out there, and you know, on a commercial level, each one touted for, you know, some wonderful attribute. And you know, go pick and choose. The Russians inherited from the Soviet Union about 400 distinct reactor designs, all up and down the scale. Take them any way you want. The world's population, we Americans, we don't have time to even if these things were as wonderful as they say, we don't have time to deploy them. We have to face up to global warming now, And so we really need to look to alternatives that can be rapidly deployed.
Well, Lex, thanks a lot for that call. And Ray, getting outside Vermont for just a moment, how would you describe the political climate for nuclear here in New England, maybe even around the country? President Obama seems to be a nuclear supporter. For the first time in decades, new plants are under construction down south. So what do you think, Ray? How would you assess the political climate right now?
The majority of members of Congress are nuclear supporters. And that has not changed since the beginning of the Cold War. So for the last 50, 60 years, that's the way it has been. And so the rise and fall of nuclear fortunes on Wall Street, the investments, the failure of investments, the great series of accidents that has led to a disenchantment with nuclear, all of that has gone on. Irrespective of where the politicians are.
I want to share an email with you guys before we close out. This is from Carol in Brattleboro, and Howard, I'll throw it to you. Carol says, Vermont Yankee should be shut down as soon as possible. Vermont receives no electricity from the dangerous and aging plant. It never produced power too cheap to meter as promised. Though the highest paying jobs in the area are at Vermont Yankee, the cost of human and environmental life to those in New England, not just a 10-mile radius, she says, should there be a nuclear disaster, is astronomical and incalculable. This gets back to, you know, weighing the risks earlier. What would you say to Carol, Howard? She's really concerned about this. And Carol, thanks for the email.
Again, I would say, you know, that's the basic decision Congress made. There's some risk. We now, for the benefit received, which Congress originally picked and is still true with global warming, replacing coal in spite of all ads on TV for clean coal and clean natural gas, which is not as bad as coal, which is some advertisement. You know, we're not as bad as the other guy. We're learning from Japan and from the history that even in a rare event of a nuclear accident, it's not nearly as serious as the regulations and all the calculations which were made on which to base the regulations thought, because, as Ray pointed out, there was a lot of conservatism in the on the safe side. So if you have failure, you'll have extra fat in there. And we now know from Japan, from the measurements that were taken around the plant of people and the projections of their dose for a year and the tiniest zone of the highest exposure, it's going to be about a CT scan or two for a year.
In other words, the same amount of radiation that you would get from a CAT scan?
Yeah, a CAT scan or two, exactly. And all the rest, less. That's how much. So there's even some advocates in the online group who are saying, hey, we ought to be saying a meltdown isn't so bad. You know, look at the evidence. It's not this, you know, pack up and leave your house forever type thing. And particularly if it doesn't get out of the plant.
One last question for you, and this is a political question, Howard, sort of like what I asked Ray. Even if you think, and as Ray said, many members of Congress think that nuclear is the perfect answer to our energy woes, as you well know, there's going to be strong opposition, lawsuits like the one that Ray's group has filed, other actions seeking to slow the process down, make it more expensive. At some point, Howard, why bother? You know, nuclear plants, for these reasons and others, take a long time to get up online. Full employment for lawyers, as we heard from John Dillon earlier. Why not just seek another alternative energy source that's less controversial?
Well, actually, you ask about the political climate around the country, and it varies quite a bit. As Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local. Nuclear power plants are welcomed with open arms down south and in Texas and so forth in Arizona, and that's where they're being built. None of the investors or the companies in New England are talking about another plant in New England for the very reason you state. You know, they've said, why bother, you know? So instead, we get some nuclear power from Canada through Hydro-Québec, and Canada's planning to build more nuclear power plants not so far away. And then there's Hydro-Québec, too. And then there's the offshore wind farms, which are only good when the wind blows.
So we have a particular political bent when it comes to nuclear power here in New England. Is that what you're saying?
Well, in the West Coast, too. You know, when you get to the middle of the country, I was in Illinois for 5 years, where President Obama's from. You know, they've got 13 operating nuclear power plants, you know.
Wow. All right. Well, Ray, what's the next step for your group? You filed a lawsuit this week with the Vermont Supreme Court, again, asking it to order Vermont Yankee to cease and desist operating. What's next for you, Ray, real quick?
Firstly, I just simply have to object to what you said with respect to groups driving up the cost of nuclear and obstructing.
That's the accusation, at least at
Seabrook. Well, yeah, I hear that, but I mean, you reflected it as if it were fact, and it's not. And I just need to respond to the whole thing about fear mongering and fear and being afraid of nuclear. Look, we are in the business because we have a sense of stewardship with regard to the public health and the environment and the land. Anybody can go on the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration website, the NOAA website, where every day they post the fallout patterns from hypothetical accidents at each of the country's nuclear power stations. And if you look at the ones for Vermont, Yankee, you will see that depending on the weather, quite often, New England is blanketed with fallout from an accident there.
And Ray, I have to cut you off there. I do apologize.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, and this has been a great discussion, guys. Ray Shattis, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. That's Ray Shattis, technical advisor for the New England Coalition. Howard Schaefer, it was good to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Howard Schaefer, coordinator for the American Nuclear Society's Grassroots Project. This is The Exchange on NHPR.